Hi, Paul, how are you?
I'm delighted.
Hi, this is you.
Did I need to just go inside?
I changed the bed.
I'm nice and comfortable waiting when I come in.
Let's get a picture over here, Paul, so you can have three or...
I love it.
One here, and I have one sitting, so not at all.
You're cool.
No, you sit there.
No, no, I don't.
My wife is...
Yes.
Well, you look fine.
I know, I look fine.
A little blowing.
It's not very good.
I started sinking back years of guns together, particularly in that 52, you remember, on the train and everything, and the convention. Gosh, it seems like a generation ago.
I saw Steve.
Well, it was a generation ago, 52 down here.
I saw Steve Larmont tonight.
Steve Larmont, yeah.
And we were talking about, Steve was a great, great social strength. In other words, he had two of these people working for him.
Yeah.
And I don't suppose anybody approved the things we did, you know, but we did hire a school board and pick it up in front of the students to tell.
In the post-war period, after World War I,
unless you have 5,500 jobs against the 40-odd million we had before the war, we're going to have trouble in the United States. And that means that we've got to reconvert fast. That's what it means. And I said, I think that we're on the way toward that. He said, I think you're quite ridiculous.
He told you that?
Yeah, talking about 55 million jobs. He said, I
have... Now we're talking about
100 million. Go ahead. I said, I'll tell you that there are 40 million homes in the United States. And they have one wage earner in every home. That's all the jobs we need. Well, I said, for Senator, I said, some young men and women want to work. He used to get red behind the ears if he could disagree with him. And he said, I'll tell you, I have no civility whatever with your program.
Well, the main thing that I felt concerned about trying to call was not the national stuff. We're actually, he was an expert on labor and a lot of other things. But I just felt the chap did not have enough interest in and enough knowledge about the world.
He didn't.
I just feel that I felt at that time that America had to have a president who, with the disillusionment of our, that was setting in because of Korea and everything, who could lead us to that period. And Eisenhower's the only one that could do it.
Well, that's all. I felt the same way.
It was the world.
It was really the foreign situation. Eisenhower's the only man that had both respect and affection for the people of the world. And I felt that we had that project that was interesting in the world, not just the domestic affairs. I know how impressed you are, and my heart was out. I want to say two things.
Good.
I'll give you the reason why I retired in 1968. 13 years ago. About 13 years ago.
Oh, 58.
58. And when Hammarskjöld asked me to come back.
Right.
And would not accept his consent. Said it wanted me to punch a clock in the morning and evening. I agreed to come back for 2 years, not a day longer.
Right.
But the reason I did was that I had a solid reason for doing it. And number one, I did think that we have a much better chance for peace in the world with the strength of the UN. Much better chance. I don't see guarantees of anything. Secondly, and this I think is important, I thought the way to strengthen the UN was with a great expansion of its economic and social activities. In other words, the peacekeeping is important, but to give solid backing upon the foundation of peacekeeping, you simply had to have a very strong hold on the world through economic and social activities. At that time, the only program the United Nations had, they had hold all the program specialized agencies, and of the expanded program ran to about $60 million. And it was, we weren't, the United Nations was not important, whatever. So I felt we could build up economic and social. And at that time, two programs together had $54 million. He said, what do you think you have to have to make the United States really important in the development field? Well, I said, I've been thinking in terms of maybe $300 million. In resources which will double a program, a long program of $600 million. And he said, well, I've been thinking that we ought to push toward $400 million. This sounds ridiculous when we only have 54. Well, we've come from 54 million this year, 71, we have about a little over 250 million to work with. The program itself will be about $550 million. And I think today, that the UNDP is recognized in the pre-investment field. I've told my Bob McNamara many times that you have one advantage over me. Now you go to a country to ask for money. You ask for so much, they only have to pay. And I ask for so little, I've got to fight so that I don't get the no down the line. I said, after all, we don't need nickels and dimes. Now you need lots of money. for investment. But there hasn't been this distinction between investment and pre-investment. But Dr. Murray tell you, and anybody else will tell you,
yeah,
that the amount of that the safe and sound investment depends upon how much pre-investment work is done. In other words, the key to development, or one that keeps going.
What is pre-investment? How do you distinguish it?
Well, pre-investment is all the activities it takes to bring, create a basis for investment.
And infrastructure, so-called?
This means infrastructure, means education.
Yeah.
It means also surveys.
Mm.
It means a whole galaxy of things you have to do in order to create a base. You go to a country and you've got to find out, what that country is. In other words, we have a big field. We are only worldwide field organization. We have 95 field offices. Why? Because it became very evident to me, as it was during the Marshall Plan, that you can't understand the country, its mores, its attitudes, its traditions, unless you have someone in the country. And we have this far-flung field organization. It's best to know what it is. I said, know what the country's attitudes are. So in planning a program of inputs in the pre-investment technical systems field, you plan in view of their situation as it is. And there's nothing more impossible than to plan a program in New York for Upper Volga. You've got to be in Upper Volga.
Yeah. I see that.
You've got to be in Upper Volga.
Oh my God, yes.
That's so well. Speaking for my successor, I've been around the world. I've been in Japan, I've been in Germany, I've been in France, I've been in Great Britain, trying to raise money for 1972. And the first question asked is, what is the United States going to do? Now, you are good enough to recommend $100 million. So we've been growing about, last year, we grew 7%, but our average yield has been about 10-15% a year. We've got to keep on growing. I just got through a week of work going to the January program. We have the biggest program we ever had. We have a big program in June. We haven't got the resources to handle today. We haven't reached, unless we draw on reserves, which we have. We must keep on going. In other words, if my successor is to succeed, he has got to have that $100 million, and no fool, because that represents $14 million from last year. It's peanuts.
86 was last year.
It's peanuts. It's nothing. It's the yeast in the local brand. Unless you get that, we're going to be there. Whoever succeeds me is going to be faced with declining resources, not expanding resources. And I've done all I can, and I want to continue to do all I can to see that it gets off to a good start. And I say, I got the key of this thing. The House Foreign Affairs Committee recommended $100 million. No problem is set. We'll get approval both in the House Foreign Affairs for the
House Committee.
We'll get approval of the Senate for the $100 million. I'm really appreciative of that. There's one man scared of the 20. And that's out of passing. And I can tell you, many contacts are out of passing. The one man he thoroughly respects is the President of the United States. If you would say a word out of passing, this is peanuts. Say a word, he's softened a good deal in the last 3 or 4 years I've been dealing with him.
Yes,
he's...
Well, he's a decent man.
He's
a very, very good conviction.
He really believes that America is going to pot because we've lost our self-reliance. He started as a boy, I know his life story. Word by word, I've heard it several times.
Yeah.
And he doesn't believe in any leaning. He doesn't believe in foreigners ought to lean on us, and the United States ought to lean on the government. Well, of course, it's a nice idea, only it doesn't work in a modern society. But if along the line, you could be willing to just let your views be known to other passengers. I'm seeing John Holmes today. Lunch. I think we'd be in there. We'd be over the 100 years of lunch. John Hannah. And but John has his own program to think about. His own program talks about business. I don't need any money. Let's get there. $2 million, but for my success, not for me. In other words, I want my successor to get off to a good start. That's why the one ambition I have left as far as UNDP has nothing to do with me. Because January 15th, I'm stepping out. January 15th, somebody else is taking over. And I think I'm hoping for Mr. Peace.
Yeah, well, he's a man that I have talked to. I think Rudy's a good man.
He's a good man.
He knows the world. He knows the business and so forth. He looks outward rather than inward, which is good. I would appreciate it if you would give him all the assistance, as I'm sure you will.
I have more dust.
Because if we're following into that job, he's going to, it's like stepping into a new world.
Well, I've had a number of talks with Rudy. I told him, I said, of course, I don't appoint my successor to appoint the Secretary General. I'm concerned. My first choice would have been, I told him, it was David Morse, because he knows this damn system. And it makes it very complex. But if it isn't David Morse, it's you. It won't be David Morse, because you don't think David Morse really wants the job.
But, yeah.
So there's no problem.
That's true.
But as far as you're concerned, I would do all I know to make the transition easy. We have gone through restructuring. I stayed on 2 years longer than I wanted to. I want to get the reorganization restructured so to go to $1 billion by 75, which is good. Total to pull from $1 billion, which means $450-500 million in sources, can be done. And it's after you fight with the world. And I'm not kidding myself. And I say, I'm not kidding myself. This is the key to development, is to get the right amount of technical assistance for reimbursement work done. And you've got a tough job with Congress, because unfortunately, the word foreign has been attached to it. And foreign is a dirty word.
Sure is.
And dirty words.
Well, the other mission, you take the area of trade. I was remarking to a group that I just met with the Cattler on the Consumers Group that they were talking about the need to have, not to have tariffs and quotas and so forth. And I said, and if you guarantee pricing, I said, that's true. I said, but you know, the constituency for liberalized trade has shrunk. The labor leaders, for example, that were for it 25 years ago are against it today. And they are just clunk at it. You know, they talk about the cheap labor abroad, and they talk about quotas, and they talk about they don't want to have them on what they call these American, what do you call them, multinational companies and so forth. They say it's law for American plants to have a subsidiary abroad. And you go on and on and on and on and on. And that's happened. Some of the business people have become that way because they have lost their will to compete. A lot of congressmen and senators reflect it because, well, some are concerned about Texas, others are concerned about shoes, and others are concerned now about automobiles. Of course, steel is a cool problem. So, now, that doesn't mean that we run to the hills, but it does mean that we have to find a way to buy a little time to get on a mark on a basis where the United States doesn't build a wall around itself. The worst thing that could happen to this country would be to give in to the, on a permanent basis, to the very strong economic isolationist trend, which is in this country. Because what would happen is not only would it have problems with consumers and so forth, but more important, it would do something to America. When a nation builds a wall around itself, the king of Norway just made a very good point. He said, look what happened to the Chinese. 1,000 years ago, they built the Great Wall of China. At that time, they had one of the greatest civilizations in the world. From that time on, they never moved. By building a wall and keeping the rest of the world out. I mean, the rest of the world went by. Now, that happened in the United States. We've got to stay in there. We've got to be competing.
Can I tell you a story that I think illustrates the importance of economic social work and the fact that,
sure,
that in supporting political activities, a strengthened economic and social program is vital. Here's another story. I was in Thailand about 6-7 years ago, and a man named Sir Rat was prime minister.
Yeah.
He was a tough guy.
Oh, sir. I remember briefly.
Very tough. But so I made some remark to Cookie, Cookie said, I was there for the purpose of organizing a meeting in Phnom Penh of the people, of the ministers who were interested in developing the Mekong Valley. And in the paper in the morning, in the statement of Surratt, about the statement of Prince Sinod, that little rabbit should not talk about the big tigers that wakes. Well, I thought that goes up to me. The minister from Thailand, the minister from Vietnam, the minister of Laos, all met in Phnom Penh, had the meeting. They were interested in developing the Mekong Valley. It made no difference what the battle going on between the prince and the prime minister. Not at all. Well, we can work. We work with everybody.
Yeah.
And we don't get involved. Don't get involved in ideology. I think that we can say we're a unifying influence.
You mean you bring no political strength?
No.
Which there are very
no. No, we don't. We don't. I find myself kind of under some difficulties when ideologically when I listen to some of the speeches I have listened to. But nevertheless, we at I must dig in with your hand. But I must say this finally. There is no chance to bring about world war politically in the lifetime of your grandchildren and grandsons. No chance. There is a real chance within half a century, maybe a century, to bring about world economic growth. And the way of peace and work is to build in one economic world, not to try to build one political world because it can't be done. I'm sure of that.
That's very, very, very compelling.
I've been 20-odd years, 25 years.
You can't bring it up politically.
It can't be.
May never happen.
May never happen. Then maybe it shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
But what should happen is we've got to bring about this. And then I must have used this. But we had two objectives, which never been publicized. One was recovery, and the second was to create a common market. Because a common market meant no wars.
Well, we certainly had the recovery and now the common market is coming about.
And there'll be no wars in Europe. Now that happened. And that was the great accomplishment, two accomplished market program, and the second, over the long term, more important than the first.
And you were there too.
I was there.
You were in the beginning?
Yeah, there.
I was at number one.
Yeah.
What a great experience. You had quite a life, haven't you? You have any regrets?
No,
not about that, though.
No, not about that.
The Marshall Plan.
Well, see, good. See,
and the council, you started that.
That's right, see.
You started that. You came on the Marshall Plan. You came into the, now on the world scene. But you had something to do. You know, so many people, Paul, who take business executives who reach retirement age. I can imagine most of the most frustrated damn people in the world, you know, they're 60, 65 years of age, and they've still got a lot of them and bigger, and what do? They gotta go play golf and fish. They say, geez, how I love to play golf and fish. After about a month, they hate it. I think.
Somebody said to me, what are you doing? At 15th, I'm not gonna get acquainted with my grandchildren.
That'd be better.
Somebody said to me, my wife said, for 1 week, that's enough. Then you get itchy again. Well, maybe. And the President of Congress said, damn, what you do between now, December 30th, and January 15th, I don't
sure.
have worries.
Don't worry, and then something else.
Thank you so much.
Well, I'm going to meet the International Drug Conference now, so this is international. Isn't it? I want to give you a couple of drinks to take along. I know. Presidential conference, that's for you.
Oh, that's nice.
And also,
I had enjoyed
bad golf. Trust you, I made very bad golf. So do I. There's your paperweight. Yes, these all have the presidential seal on it. back in this May, this is one of these ones, with the gold and blue, and that's the difference.
Like a good one, one found me.